morning, everybody. Welcome. Or good afternoon. I guess wherever you are, Tim, right? Thanks for joining us here on Dropping the Gloves. We really appreciate the support. I hope everybody's having a nice Friday, getting ready for the weekend. Tim's going to finally go back to North Carolina, Tim. How long has it been since you've been at home?
Yeah, it's been like a week plus, 10 days, something like that. So I'm going to hit the road after work today, get as far as I can. I'm going to hopefully get past New York City so I can avoid it in the morning and then just do my whatever remaining 10 hours tomorrow.
No, I would just rip right through. Just go for it. Just poof, straight shot, Tim. You can do it.
Drive through the night, get there in the morning.
Yeah, there was one time I was up in Houghton, Michigan. I went to Michigan Tech. I think it was about when I was going to start pro. Yeah, so I was doing summer classes. I didn't graduate after my senior year for a myriad of reasons. Anyways, I was getting ready for camp. I didn't go to the NHL camp, a whole other thing, the NHL camp. So the prospects camp, and I'll just do a tangent here. There was a prospects camp in Traverse City where I live now, and the Wild were a part of it. I guess the prospects were so bad and so terrible that Jacques Lemaire was like, I don't want these kids at the NHL camp. And so he just said, we're only having the NHL players at camp, plus a few other guys that I think could make the team. So usually a camp has 50, 60 players to start off with. He had like 30, the whole camp. He's like, I don't want these young kids ruining my camp. He just like, screw it. Send them back to the AHL or send them back to the junior teams. I'm not having them. I wasn't at the prospects camp, but I got lumped in with these kids because I was a college, whatever. I was 22, 23, you know, and I just went right to the AHL camp. I was like, come on. But anyways, I was getting ready to go down to Houston. I was up in Houghton, wrapping up things, packing up my truck, about to drive down. I get a call from the assistant coach saying, hey, where are you? I'm like, what do you mean? Where am I? I'm like, it's Tuesday. Camp starts on Friday. I'm getting ready to go. Like, we're going to leave. And he's like, no, camp starts on Thursday. It's Tuesday at 2 o'clock. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, camp starts like in a day and a half. Get your tail down here. So I had to quickly throw everything into the back of my truck. I left Wednesday morning, got there Thursday morning, and just walked right into the rink for my first ever AHL camp on zero sleep, 25 and a half hours from Houghton to Houston. It was insane. Straight through. I wasn't a big coffee drinker or caffeine drinker, downing monsters the whole way. Like, it was insane. So it can be done. But I guess you don't have a pressing timeline as I did.
No, there's a different level of motivation for you when the money and living your dream, no big deal. But
how dumb was I, though? Like, it's just so dumb. My first pro camp, so excited, and I just get the days wrong. I'm just like,
you need to involve Danielle in that. She would have had you there on time, well-rested, well-fed. She would have taken care
of it. She didn't want me playing pro hockey, Tim.
Yes, she did. Early on, no. She let you try it.
She's like, 3 years, then you're done. And okay, so that was my year one.
Right, yeah, she was involved.
So it's not like she was a massive cheerleader. She's like, go and get this out of your system, whatever this is, and then you can get a real job. It's like, okay, sounds good. Look where we're at now, baby. Doing a hockey podcast. She hates it.
Were you married yet at that point?
No, we were not even engaged at that point. So I think we got engaged the next summer. We had just started dating. We started dating after my senior year of college. So it was still fresh, but yeah, very, very stressful drive down. I still remember walking and everyone's like, you look like garbage. I'm like, yeah, I just drove 26 hours. I've been downing monsters and Red Bulls and coffees and all right, let's do camp. It's unbelievable. But anyways, you're going home later today. We got a podcast to do. There's lots of stuff to talk about. Well, let's recap Ryan Reeves. I wanted to go over that because I had a great time. It's not often you get an interview where it's just like fun. Revo was in a good mood. You can tell he was happy. He's going to Toronto. He's got a 3-year deal under his belt. He's going to ride off into the sunset, hopefully with the Stanley Cup. But what did you think of that interview, Tim? It was great, right?
It was great, especially the second half. You guys just giving it to each other. You told him he was overpaid to his face, his entire career, which is great. I posted the little bit where you said, yeah, there were multiple years where I didn't have any points. And he was like, yeah, I believe that. And so there was a comment on Instagram about it. And they're like, go look at John Scott's career highlights. You can watch all five of his goals without taking a breath.
Yeah. Pretty good. I know. Well, what are you going to do? You got to embrace it. I didn't score many points. It is what it is. He actually puts up some decent points. What I saw was people wanted me to ask him if he was going to fight Lucic this year.
Yeah.
And we talked about it before the show, you and I. I know I asked Lucic about it when we talked to him. Are you going to fight Revo? I hate putting fighters on the spot like that because I was always put in that position. It's like, are you going to fight this guy? Are you going to fight this guy? It's uncomfortable. I don't want to do that to somebody when I just hated when people would do that to me. Are you going to fight Colt Noor? Are you going to do this? Are you going to do that? Maybe. I don't know. And then you just get nervous and it's just whole big thing. So I'm sorry, everybody. I just didn't want to put him in that situation. I want him to fight, you know, Luch. I was thinking about it, but, you know, I just didn't want to do it. So anyways, it was a good guy. I'm excited to see how he does in Toronto. Do you think he's going to make a huge difference there at all? Like, where is he going to impact the team more, in the locker room or on the ice?
Well, both, because he does have a presence. He's not there to score 40 goals like he said, but guys behave better when he's around, and there hasn't been a guy like him in this division in a long time, it feels like, unless I'm forgetting somebody. But when the last time there was a heavy in the Atlantic that actually struck fear in people?
Yeah, it's probably been a minute. I don't know, probably back in the days when I played. Maybe it's been a while. It's funny how the shift of the heavyweights goes. When I was in the league, it was like, okay, everyone's out west, and then it goes out east, and then now it's out eight. And now in the Atlantic Division, all of a sudden, Milan Lucic goes to Boston, Ryan Reeves goes to Toronto, and now the Ottawa Senators just signed Zach McEwen to a three-year deal. Those are three big heavies, and it all was initiated by Ryan Reeves. So it's just funny how these things work. GM is like, okay, checkmate, counter move. Everybody's looking at all the other teams, what they're doing. Okay, you get Ryan Reeves. Well, we got to protect our players. We're not going to let you run around and just bury Norris and Tkachuk and who else, Stutzel and these guys. We got to get Zach McEwen to kind of address that. So it's interesting. I love it. It's a good thing for the hockey league.
Do you think you got a lot of people jobs just by being around?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, for sure. I kept a lot of guys in the league for a few more years just because I was kicking around. And the same could be said for me. I wouldn't get a job if it wasn't for Luch in Buffalo. So it's good for business. Speaking of Toronto and players and who's going to be there and who is Ryan Reeves trying to protect, one of the main reasons he's going there is Willie Nylander. One of the dynamic, what was the four, the Marvel four? It was, what was they called? One of the Fantastic Four. Willie Nylander, this is his last year on his deal, Tim. He's going to be a UFA next year. The kid is having a great career. He is outkicking his contract right now. He only makes $6.962 million. He consistently puts up 70, 80 points. He's on the power play. He's an all-star. He was the best player in the playoffs last year. He needs a new deal. He wants to be paid like the other three. He wants Matthews, Tavares, Marner money. There's not enough money to go around. You can't have guys making $10 million, four guys making $10 million, but that's exactly what Willie Nylander wants. He wants $10 million. What are the Leafs saying to Willie Nylander, Tim?
They want to meet him at $8 million, and so there's like a standoff right now. And Nylander is a 26-year-old 40-goal scorer. Like, he is... If it wasn't for Matthews and Marner, like, he's a superstar. He's a budding superstar right now. And so he wants to go get paid like one. And then that brings the question, like, you know, Toronto can't afford it. Do you think he's intentionally pricing himself out? Is he forcing a trade or forcing a message, you know, like, hey, I'm not coming back by asking for this much money? Because, you know, they can't give it to you.
Well, no, you ask what you think you're worth. And I think he is definitely worth $10 million in today's market. It is what it is. It's not his fault that they don't have the money to re-sign him. By the way, one of the best contracts signed by Kyle Dubas. was the Willie Nylander contract. 5 years, 6.9 mil per, or 6 years, excuse me. It was a beautiful contract, $45 million. So well done by Kyle Dubas. We'll touch on him in a little bit, how he's doing in Pittsburgh, but it is what it is. Willie Nylander is a star in the NHL, like it or not. I don't really like it. I think he has to work on a lot of aspects of his game. I think there's a lot of holes in his game. But when it comes down to brass tacks, this guy puts up points. He put up 87 points last year. He's got another 80-point season in his under his belt. And like you said, he's only 27 years old.
26.
Yeah. 27 years old. It's 27 years old. Right?
Okay.
Are we going to do this in front of the kids? It's 27 years old. I think what it boils down to, and what we were talking about before the show, this is Toronto's last year to win the Stanley Cup with these four guys. All four of them will not be there next year. It's impossible to fit all four of these guys under the cap and to have a good team surrounding them. You can't re-sign Willie Nylander. This will be his last season with the Toronto Maple Leafs, unless you get rid of one of the other guys, Tavares, Marner, Matthews. I don't know what to do. You're Brad Treveeling. You're coming into this situation and you have seismic decisions to make right now. Matthews and Nylander are on the last years of their contracts. What do you do? What? I don't know. I do not envy his situation. You have to pick one player and just say, you're my guy for the next 7 years. Because one of these guys is going to get a 7 year deal. I think it's going to be Matthews. He's marketable. He's big. He's a couple years younger. He's a 60 goal scorer. He's the guy. He's going to cost $12, $13 million. Can you win with a guy making that much money? I don't know. Recent history suggests no. You can't win a Stanley Cup with a guy making that much money and fill out the roster with good players around him. So I don't know. What do you think they do, Tim? You have your kind of... You have the pulse of the league right now more than I do, I think. What's the direction they go here?
So wouldn't Treliving in the interview for the GM job like have brought a plan with him? Like, not that he'd have to be concrete and 100% stick to it, but doesn't he have to like interview and pitch what he envisioned for the future, or at least the near future of this team?
You would think, right? But executives, I don't think understand. I don't know. You would think he would have an idea. Shanny obviously is still pulling the strings here. He has the ultimate idea of where the Toronto Maple Leafs should go. But they're going to be over the cap going into this season this year. They have to make moves. Once they get Ilya Samsonov's situation figured out, and we'll touch on that in a little bit, they still need to, you know, cut some salary. There's some room that needs to, some work that needs to be done here with the Leafs. But just going back to Willie Nylander, he wants 10. Leafs want him at 8. I think he's worth 10. I really do. And I think he will get it easily going to the market. So what do you do? This is a tricky situation that Treveeling finds himself in. You're coming up to the trade deadline. Nylander's not signed. You're pushing for the Stanley Cup. What do you do? Do you let this 27-year-old like stud just walk in the off season? That's the bigger question here. Cause I don't think they get a deal done. They can't, it's impossible. Well, it's not impossible, but it's improbable. What would you do? It's such a big, cause you're basically, he's worth two or three first rounders. Like that's how good this kid is. I don't know. I do not envy his situation, Tim.
No, I mean, 8-ish months from now, approaching the deadline, they're going to be first or second in the division. They're going to be winning everything. And he's going to have a crossroads. Like, do I trade Nylander and get someone else who could help me this year? Because that's still going to be the priority, while also getting some picks for the future and getting fair value for what he's worth. Or do you keep him around and risk losing one or both of them for nothing? Both of them being Matthews and Nylander. And whatever decision you make, you are going to get like lambasted by the fans of Toronto, unless you win the cup. But if you go to the cup finals and you lose, even if you go to the finals and Nylander doesn't come back for nothing, you'll never be forgiven. And it's a lose-lose.
And this isn't just a Nylander-Matthews thing. You have Bertuzzi, you have Domi, you have Laftery, you have Brody, you have Klingberg. All of these guys are upcoming UFAs. it's very rare you see a contending team with Stanley Cup aspirations have a salary cap situation like this. It sets them up for future success. I like where they're at. If this was a middle of the road team, I like it. This is a Stanley Cup contending perennial. I know they haven't won anything in the playoffs, but every year everyone's, you know, this is the year for Toronto. They have the roster. They have the guys. Half the team could be gone next year, more than half the team. They have nine guys who are going to be UFAs after this season. It's pretty remarkable. But anyways, I don't think Nylander resigns.
Would you rather have Nylander for 10 or 9.5 or have Matthews for 13.5?
Oh, gosh. What makes it so tricky is Tavares. So I think I'd rather have Matthews. You too?
Yeah. I mean, were you going to say because you don't want to be without a 1C if Tavares starts to decline?
No, I think Tavares has already started to decline a little bit, and he's the reason that they're having a hard time getting over that hump. Like, I like him. He puts up points. It's hard not to put up points when you're playing with the players he's playing with, but, you know, I wish he wasn't on Toronto. He makes too much for what he does to this team. So, I don't know. It's tough. He's their captain. He really, 2 years ago, I said he was a straw that stirs the drink. Now I want him off the team. It's so funny how things change, but just strictly salary cap based, he's the reason why they're in this predicament. I like Marner. I like Matthews. I like Nylander. I like all these guys. They're good players. If Tavares isn't there, this is not an issue at all. So no one's going to take on his contract. Anything else in Toronto, Tim, you want to touch on?
No, let's move on.
All right, moving on. A couple other superstars. And I mean superstars are having issues. What's going on with a little DeBrincat up in Ottawa, Sam? What's the newest information up there?
Well, we talked a few weeks ago about him, you know, not formally requesting a trade, but basically his agent was saying he wanted to try it on a new team. And so there's a kind of this rumor swirling about DeBrincat. And then meanwhile, Tarasenko is being linked to Ottawa. He's arguably the top free agent left to be signed on the market still. And there's a tweet from Andrew Strickland that kind of clarified the situation. And he said, barring a sudden shift, and as always, things can change very quickly, my guess is that the DeBrincat situation has held up Ottawa from signing Tarasenko. Once he's moved, most likely to the Red Wings, that will open up the door for Tarasenko to sign with Ottawa. So it's looking like they're working out a deal to send the DeBrincat to Detroit for, you know, a trade and sign. And then Tarasenko will sign in Ottawa. So that's most likely the situation. DeBrincat's an RFA whose rights are still owned by Ottawa at this point.
Hmm. Interesting. If Detroit, I like Steve Yzerman. I think he has done really, really great things in this league. If Detroit trades for DeBrincat and gives up draft capital or prospects, and then proceeds to sign him for anything more than $7 million, it's a huge loss for the Detroit Red Wings. I don't like what Stevie Y's done this offseason. I don't think the Red Wings are better this year than they were last year. I think his back end is very suspect. Mo Sider is the only decent player on that back end that I like. He brought in Ben Chiarot last year, signed him to this massive deal. He's 32 years old. I don't like that deal. He brings in Shane Gostisbehere, signs him for four and a half, Tim, almost, just for 1 year. I don't like that deal. He brings in Justin Hall, gives him 3.4 for 3 years. I hate that deal. I don't understand this deal. He trades for Jake Walman last year, gives up a first rounder. Don't understand that. Their defense sucks. Can I just say it? Am I allowed to say that?
Very fair.
I don't like what he's done with this team. He had so many options, and he's just flushing it down the drain. He's bringing in good players, but it's almost like a revamp of the Montreal Canadiens era with Marc Bergevin, where you're just bringing in third line guys. You're bringing in hard workers. You're not bringing in talent. You're bringing in Kopp. You're bringing in Compher. You're bringing in Sprong. You're bringing in Fisher. There's no talent there. Surround Lucas Raymond with good players. Surround Dylan Larkin with good players. Maybe this is why they're trying to bring DeBrincat in. I don't know. I think you're going to overpay for DeBrincat. You're going to sign him to a big deal. Look at this roster. They ain't going nowhere. They're not.
Well, they do have some cap room. What if they trade for DeBrincat and then go sign Patrick Kane? Get those two guys together on a different uniform.
It's still not enough. It's not enough in the East right now.
No, not enough to contend, but it makes them more fun to watch and also probably gives Raymond a better chance of progressing and upskilling this year.
For a team 3 years ago that had Larkin, that had Bertuzzi, that had, did they have Anthony Mantha? They had like lots of good young players. They just got Mo Sider. They had Lucas Raymond. They were going to get all kinds of salary cap space. They had draft picks up to yin yang. Fast forward to now, huge disappointment, which Steve Yzerman has done. Remember, we were lauding the Red Wings 3 years. They could be Stanley Cup contenders. Them, Ottawa, and Buffalo. Detroit's not even in the conversation anymore.
What I specifically remember was like, okay, he has no contracts. He's going to have so much space. He can go out and bring in whoever he wants. He's going to be running the table in free agency. And yeah, he's brought in Andrew Kopp and Justin Hall. You know,
he signed Kubelik. He got Klim Kostin and re-signed him. That's great. Sprong, that's fantastic. Yeah, he's going to make a difference. Christian Fisher, re-up Dylan Larkin. That's great. Swing and a miss, I guess. They all can't be Tampa Bay Lightnings. It is what it is. So DeBrincat's going to go there. Tarasenko, strangely enough, has fired his agents, and now he's represented by CAA, those big guys over there. Rumor got out that he was being offered in the range of $5 to $6 million per year, and he was not happy about that. So he gassed his agents. He wants more money. Don't you think that $5 to $6 million for Vladimir Tarasenko is right where his value should be at this point?
Probably, but guys are getting paid more than they're worth all the time. And so he wants to be one of them. It's less about what he brings and more about the comparables.
Yeah, I just feel like this offseason is different. And the effects of COVID, the effects of the salary cap, they're finally sinking in. Teams are not overextending. Teams can't overextend. You go to market and there's no money there. Tyler Bertuzzi is a prime example. Tyler Bertuzzi is younger. Tyler Bertuzzi is more effective at this point in his career than Vladimir Tarasenko. And he only got 5.5 for 1 year. So if Tarasenko has this grand idea that he's going to get a deal in the $7-8 million range, I think he's going to be sorely disappointed. This guy, if he was getting offers from Carolina, which has been, said for $5.5 to $6 million, he should have jumped at that opportunity.
Okay, but listen to these deals. Alex Killorn, 4 years at 6.25 per. Jason Zucker, 1 year, 5.3. Barbashev, 5x5. I mean, he deserves more than these guys, doesn't he?
No.
Maybe not Barbashev.
Maybe not any of them.
You don't think he deserves more than Killorn or Zucker?
I don't. Maybe Zucker. I'll give you Zucker. Killorn's a good player. Everybody forgets about Killorn. He was a huge part of those Tampa Bay Lightning teams. The guy puts up points. He is a good hockey player. Barbashev at this point is better than Vladimir Tarasenko. Tarasenko, don't forget, has had major injury concerns the last 3-4 years. So it's not like he's a spring chicken who's going to go out there and you're going to get him for 5-6 years. He is on the back nine, maybe even the back five of his career. This guy is in la la land if he thinks he's going to get $7-8 million. Sorry. Well, that's just the way I see it.
In the past 5 years, he's only scored more than 10 goals one time. And that was 2 years ago, 3 years ago, he scored 34 goals, 21, 22 and beyond. And every year he's been healthy, he scored 30 plus, but beyond that is a lot of injuries, a lot of missed games.
Yeah. 1920, 3 goals, 10 games. 2021, 4 goals, 24 games. Healthy in 21-22, he got 34 goals. The resurgence. The next year, he's getting 18 goals in 70 or 69 games. The combination of St. Louis and New York. The fact that a team offered him $5.5-6 million, which was reported, I would be ecstatic. Especially a team like Carolina, where you know you're going to get opportunities, you're going to win, cup aspirations. He should have jumped at it. I don't know. It's one of the situations where it's like, I used to be a superstar. Yeah, you did. You're not anymore. You're a good second, third line guy. Like, let's just embrace that. take the money and go to a winning team. Now he's going to try to force his way to a contract, and he's going to, I don't know. He buried me one time, Vladimir Tarasenko. Reversed hit me center ice in St. Louis. Oh my gosh, so embarrassing.
I thought that was Sobotka.
They both, actually, you know what? Tarasenko did it in the corner. Sobotka was center ice, your ice. They both, they used to have such a heavy team. Oh, I hated playing
thick
St.
boys.
Louis.
Thick boys.
Thick boys. All right, moving on. What's going on with Kopitar here, Tim?
Well, speaking of guys getting a lot of money, he signed an extension 2 years at $7 million per. He's 36 years old, coming off a great season, 74 points. They made the playoffs, but it seems like a lot, doesn't it? Don't you feel like most of the guys, the Bergeron is the closest comparable, 36 years old last year, coming off of 65 points in 73 games. He signed a one-year deal worth 2.5. How is Kopitar getting $14 million?
No idea, especially because he has one more year left on his deal this year at $10 million. So he's extending even early. So it's a great deal for Kopitar. I think this plays a lot into just he is LA's guy. He's their captain. He's their leader. He's been there his whole career. He's going to finish his career there, probably play 1,400 games in LA. He's going to get the statue. A lot of sentimental stuff going on. I don't know. It's a lot. It's a lot of money. I don't understand what Rob Blake's doing, but I don't know. He's going to be 38 when he retires. Usually at this point, like you said, you give him a $4 million a year deal. But it does what it does. It takes the pressure off Pierre-Luc Dubois. It takes the pressure off Philip Deneau. It lets Anssi Kopitar eat those minutes on the first line, second line. He's going to play against the other team's first line. Most likely, he's still a very good defensive forward, and he puts up points. So, like, he's worth it if he keeps, you know, putting up numbers like he did last year. Don't get me wrong. Like, how can you not give a guy who put up 74 points $7 million? The year before, he got 67 points. His play hasn't dipped at all, Tim. He's been steady as she goes, regardless of the LA is good or bad. He is the one consistent there. So if he continues to put up points and produce in the playoffs like he's always done, I like it. But it just does seem like a lot for a guy of his age. You're right.
Usually you see those guys taking like team friendly deals at this point, staying around, still the captain, still even playing first line minutes, but they're not getting the top bang for their buck. So good for him for getting it.
And he's much better than Bergeron. Right? Don't you think?
I'm declining to answer that.
Well, what do their career points look like? Because Kopitar is a point per game guy. He has done it his whole entire career. He's got multiple Stanley Cups under his belt. What does a Bergeron have? Does he even have anywhere near a point per game? Rip up his stats, Tim.
Yeah, I'm pulling it up now.
Patrice Bergeron compared.
Yeah, he's very close. 1,040 points in 1,200 games, almost 1,300 games.
So not even close.
Yes.
So he's Kopitar's better. Kopitar's better than that's an interesting one. Who would you rather
Kopitar,
take? Anssi Kopitar or Patrice Bergeron?
You got 2 cups to 1 Kopitar's favor. You have more Selkies in Bergeron's favor.
That's such a stupid award.
What's worth more, a Selkie or a Stanley Cup? People are wondering.
Nobody's wondering that. Only you and Jack Edwards are wondering that. It's like it's such a dumb question. All right. Good for Anssi Kopitar. Good for Patrice Bergeron. Some would say the reason they lost in the playoffs this last season. He was 0-3 in the playoffs. They were 3-1.
No one's saying that.
Bruins were up 3-1. Correct me if I'm wrong. Bergeron enters the lineup. He does not win a game.
There's got to be something else we can talk about here.
That did happen. Okay, moving on.
Keep his name out of your mouth.
Arbitration season is upon us. And arbitration is a very rare tool that's rarely used. There's only 2 major sports leagues that have this option. It's the Major League Baseball and the NHL. What happens is a team controls a player until they're 26 years old. A team has the option to sign a player, can match contracts, whatever they want to do. You sign your first 3-year entry-level contract, which is 3 years. Once that's done, you become a restricted free agent. It gives the players a little bit of flexibility. You can go out. You can find another contract. If you find that contract, it's called an offer sheet. Your current team can match it. And if they don't want to match it, the team that gave you that contract has to give up draft capital to your current team. If that makes sense. Players can opt for salary arbitration. Teams can opt for salary arbitration if you cannot come to a deal. It's very rare that it goes to the full salary arbitration, third party, neutral observer, doling out a contract. Most likely, the last few years, I think teams and players come to an agreement before it gets to arbitration. But this year, 22 players have decided to opt into the salary arbitration option. Most of them are kind of lackluster. You don't really care about, but there are some worthwhile contracts to be had here. And I'm going to play a little game, Tim. It's called Guess the Salary They Get. And there's some big names here that you would think are a lot older than they actually are, but they're still salary arbitration eligible. And they're going to get some big do-re-mi dollar amounts. The first one I want to talk about is a player I've talked about quite a bit, actually, especially last year, Vince Dunn for the Seattle Kraken, coming off a very good season, all-star season. Seattle Kraken made it to the Western Conference Finals. Surprisingly, last year he made $4 million. What does Vince Dunn make next year? He had 64 points in 81 games. He's a proven defender in the NHL. He's played almost 500 games. What is a Vince Dunn worth to you, Tim?
I'm going to guess somewhere in the 6.5-7 range.
For how many years?
This is 5 years. I'm thinking he's probably asking for 8, and the team's probably at 5.5 to 6. So I think somewhere in the middle.
So the way with this works is it's such a weird situation where it almost ruins the relationship between the team and the player. Because you go to this third party arbitrator, Vince Dunn will bring his dollar amount, what he thinks he's worth. The team will bring their dollar amount, what they think Vince Dunn is worth. And then you have to prove your argument. And everybody's in the same room. And so the Seattle Kraken are saying, you know, Vince is a good player, but we don't think he's worth $8 million. And these are the reasons why. And Vince just sitting there going, okay, yeah, okay. Thanks. Appreciate it. Like, there's my GM and the other top execs just throwing me under the bus. And then Vince Dunn, once they're finished, has to come around and go, okay, this is why I am worth that much. I put up these many points. I'm, you know, a rock in the locker room, this and that. You can't bring up other players' contracts because that's, I don't know why you can't bring that up, but it fractures relations. This is why it very rarely goes to this point. But when it does, these relationships don't really last for that much longer. All right, moving on.
Has any of your like close teammates, like a Bickle or Ott or whatever the guys you were closer with, gone through that? Have you heard anything about? Like,
no, it's very rare. The only time Thomas Vanek got an offer sheet. That was the first major one. He received an offer sheet from Edmonton. That was a huge one. And he signed it. And then the Sabres had to match. But it's very rare that it gets to the point of salary arbitration. So no, I've never been on a team when someone has gone through this because it is so rare. All right, moving on. Your Boston Bruins, Trent Frederick. We'll start with him because they have two going to arbitration. And we know how much cap space the Bruins have. Well documented. Don Sweeney's just been killing it this offseason. Trent Frederick going into arbitration. He's coming to the table. He's like, hey, I made 1.05 last year, drastically underpaid. I give life to the team. I had 31 points for a 4th/3rd line guy. That's unbelievable. The guys love me in the locker room. I want how much, Tim? How much does Trent Frederick want from the Boston Bruins?
How much does he want? Probably, I don't know, 4. I'm giving him 2.5. That's my number.
2.5? Okay, that's a good number. I think that would be a fair number. Double his salary, walk away happy. Jeremy Swayman, friend of the show. He's going into arbitration. He wants a new deal. He was arguably the starting goaltender, not this year, but last year. Played 41 games, the lion's share of the games. This year, he played 37 games. Stellar numbers. Over 9.92 save percentage. His goals against was 2.27. That's fantastic. Playoffs, he stunk. Let's call a spade a spade. The guy was junk in the playoffs. But he's a good young goaltender. He only made $1 million last year. He's still yet to reach his peak. He's 24 years old, Tim. He's walking in. He wants a new deal. He's looking at Don Sweeney. He looks him right in the eye. He says, Don, I want this much. What's that amount, Tim?
Well, okay, I'm looking at the last 10 or so goalie signings that were over $5 million, and the only one that goes higher than 5.5, 6 is Sorokin that just signed last week. All the other goalies are in the 5 range. Tristan Jarry, Jack Campbell, Darcy Kemper, Cal Peterson, Merzlikins, UC Saros, Shesterkin, Grubauer, Allmark, Demko, all about $5 million to $5.5 million. So I'm thinking that's what his number is going to be. He could try to get more. I can't imagine him giving more than that. What do you think?
You think he's going to ask for 5?
He might ask for more, but I don't think he's going to get more than that.
Oh, I see. I am very conservative. I feel like he will get 3.2.
The numbers are really good. His career numbers are really good. He's still very young, coming off the a small contract, but the sample size is small. You know,
never
what I mean?
Been a starter. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I'd give him 5.
If the arbitrator awards him 5, do the Bruins take it? They can walk away. It's up to them. They can totally walk away.
You have to take it. You should take it and trade Allmark. I don't know why they haven't done that already.
You don't have to take it. You can walk away.
I know, but I'm saying you can't let him walk away.
Well, you might, because if they sign him, who's going to take Allmark in his $5 million contract?
He just won the Vezina, John.
Talking about how there's no money in the system. Teams just can't. Oh, yeah, $5 million. Sure, I'll take it. Like that. That's very hard to find a team who's going to put $5 million into their goaltending duo. Teams most likely have their goaltending duo set by this point.
He's got 2 more years at $5 million per. He just won the Vezina. I think he would be a very attractive trade candidate for every team that could afford him.
Well, why is he even a trade candidate if he's so attractive?
Because the Bruins are in cap hell and they have no choice.
All right, another goaltender finally.
Just wanted to hear me say that. Yeah.
Well, the Bruins. The Bruins were my favorite team growing up.
Okay.
So. Okay. It's the state of the nation. It is what it is. All right, the Toronto Maple Leafs, Ilya Samsonov. Going into salary arbitration. He was coming off of a 1 year, $1.8 million deal, kind of bet on himself deal. And boy, did it pay off. He was a stud this year. 2.3 goals against 0.919 save percentage, a tick below Jeremy Swayman. What does he want from Toronto? Knowing full well that Toronto's goaltending situation is absolutely atrocious at this point. They have nobody between Joseph Woll, Matt Murray. That's not the answer. If I'm Ilya Samsonov, I'll take this one. He's going and asking for 6. That's it. Like, I think you shoot for the fences. You are worth so much to this team. You go in asking for $6 million. What do you think he's going to ask for, Tim?
That was my number, 6 or 7. And I think he'll probably land somewhere around 5 like those other guys we listed.
Oh, and then it's even a worse situation for Toronto salary cap wise. But what makes it worse is they have to sign this guy. They cannot go into this season with Murray Woll. Not a chance. You have to re-up Samsonov. You have to get this guy locked in. And what this does, if Toronto does accept the deal, it opens up a second buyout window for them, which is a luxury not a lot of teams have. And they can just buy out Matt Murray. So I think that's what will happen. They'll accept whatever arbitrator comes to, they'll accept it for Ilya Samsonov. And then you're going to buy out Matt Murray. If it goes that far. But most times it doesn't. But it's just fun to talk about. Anybody else you want to talk about? There's Tanner Janot. There's Kurashev from Chicago. There's Brett Howden, Stanley Cup champion for the Vegas Golden Knights. There's Gustafson. There's a lot of good players. Troy Terry, Gabriel Vilari from the Winnipeg Jets. We can't do them all, Tim. Is there anybody else you wanted to talk about?
No, you covered the ones I wanted to get into. I'm fascinated by this process. I would not be good at sitting in a room where everyone's talking about the pros and cons of me as a player. I think it would be very uncomfortable. But I'm sure there's going to be at least one or two surprises. Guys going for a lot more, a lot less than we thought here today.
I will hazard a guess. 0 of these go to arbitration.
0? There's always 0. Some.
No, there's not. There's most times, like 2001, 2002, there wasn't any.
Okay.
21, 22, excuse me. All right. Erik Karlsson rumors. And this is where I was going to touch on Kyle Dubas. You know, his first swing into free agency, Kyle Dubas, not really great. I don't think he really made a huge impact with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Who did he bring in? Jeff Petrie? Sign him? I don't know who else. Ryan Graves, excuse me. $4.5 million over 7 years or something. Not impressed by that. Re-up Tristan Jarry, 5.375 for 5 years. I don't know. Well, the rumor mills are swirling that he is kicking the tires on Erik Karlsson. And the offer that is reportedly being offered to San Jose, and if it is, then he hasn't accepted it. I don't know why Mike Greer is even a GM in this NHL right now. But the reported offer that Kyle Dubas has to San Jose right now for Erik Karlsson is him eating $9 million in cap, Joseph, two first rounders, and Mikael Granlund. That's so insane to me if that's an offer, and Mike Greer hasn't accepted that yet. Let me repeat that. Erik Karlsson with $9 million cap hit, so San Jose eats $1 million. Joseph, two first rounders, and Mikael Granlund. That's insane. That's insane that he's not doing that. This can't be true, right?
Is there any reason to suspect that Letang and Karlsson would work better than Burns and Karlsson did?
I know, right? It's so bizarre. Well, to think that they would have over almost $35 million on their back end if they did acquire this guy is so dumb. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. That's why I don't think this is real. I really don't.
Does he make them a cup contender if that deal goes through?
No, are you nuts? No. No. I think he makes a team worse. I am all out on Erik Karlsson at this point. And it's funny to hear the Sharks fans defend him and stuff. And he's got over 100 points and this and that. Would you rather have a defenseman get 100 points and just be a total liability on the back end? Like, it was very, you would watch a San Jose game. And there was a lot of times he was like a young Brent Burns where he was in the offensive zone more than he was the defensive zone. I'm like, are you playing defense? Are you? Or would you rather have a defenseman like a Jakob Slavin or a Jacob Slavin, however you want to call it, in Carolina, who maybe puts up 30 points, 40 points, but is just a stud on the back end? I think the answer is obvious. You want a Slavin, Jakob. So if Dubas is offering this contract, he needs to be fired today. And if Mike Greer has this offer sitting on his table and he hasn't accepted it, he needs to be fired now. Like, you sign that contract as quick as you get it. This deal is like as good as it's going to get. I was always under the impression that you would have to give up a first rounder to trade Erik Karlsson and his massive contract. That's still, by the way, on the books for another 3 years, I believe, at $10 million. And this guy is getting older and older. Sorry, $11.5 million. Oh, it's worse.
Does the fact that he won the Norris add value? Or does it not really matter?
It's perceived value.
Yeah.
No, in my eyes, it doesn't. Because he shouldn't have won it. It was a bad... The Norris is a sham now in my eyes. It's not the best defenseman. It's the defenseman who gets the most points. You can't sit there and smirk and roll your eyes and tell me and not lie to me that Karlsson, if you're drafting a team, Karlsson is not even my top 10 defenseman.
Agreed. I agree. And on top of that, the fact that he makes 11.5, like if Karlsson made 5.5, then you put up with that stuff. You know what I mean? But
I don't even care about salary. I don't even care about that. He's not a good defenseman. He's not. If I'm drafting a team tomorrow, he's not in my top 10 for defense. I'm taking Fox. I'm taking McAvoy. I'm taking Josi. I'm taking Hamilton. I'm taking Makar. I'm taking Heiskanen. I'm taking Hedman. I'm taking Hughes.
Petrangelo.
I'm going Orlov even. I'm like Ekblad, Riley. There's so many other players. Hampus Lindholm over him. He's probably not even in my top 15, 20 on defense. And I'm not doing that for effect for the show to go, oh, let's meme this crap up. I don't think he's a good defenseman. That's all. Maybe I'd put him on my 3-4 and say, let her rip, go for it. Maybe he might be my top 15 at that point. So there you go. Yeah, Dubas. That can't be correct. It has to be wrong. All right, what else? Who retired here?
Yeah, Patrick Hornquist retired. I was looking at his numbers. Pretty underrated career. He had 543 points, I think, in about 900 games. He has two Stanley Cup championships. He won a gold medal with Sweden. Really good player, super effective. I think he kind of reminded me of what's his name for Detroit? They had in the, like 15 years ago, that big, what the mule, Franzen. You reminded me of him a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, Johan Franzen, yep.
Yeah. Any good run-ins with him over the years?
Not really.
Yeah. No. Good player.
I tried not to play against the first line players. So, but he was just like, he was like a Joe Pavelski. He would tip, he would be always in the mix. He wasn't afraid to go in the corners. He's just a good player, a perfect player to ride shotgun to Crosby. Like, he really was for a long time. He would just benefit from all those shots and feeds and pass. Like, good player. Very good player. Good for him. Happy he had a good career. All right. Are we going to do a voicemail, Tim?
Yeah, I've got a few here. Let me queue it up here. And I was showing John listeners that this works better now and you're going to be able to hear it and just better quality all around. So I'm going to fire up a few here that we've gotten from listeners lately. All right. You ready, John?
Sure. It's working great, Tim.
I know I spoke too soon. One sec.
This is Lance calling from Utah. I was just curious what your favorite NHL team logo is from a design standpoint, from an aesthetics, not necessarily from a legacy sports standpoint, but which one you like to look at, and also which is your least favorite. Thank you very much. Bye.
All right. I'm hearing these for the first time. Tim, what's your favorite?
I really like the Red Wings and the Blackhawks. I know those are the kind of the two that everyone says. I think those are beautiful. I would also love the Mighty Ducks logo, the Mighty Ducks, not the Anaheim Ducks, with the goalie mask and everything. Least favorite, probably the new Ducks and the Dallas Stars, I think is pretty lame. I mean, I'm not super, you know, some people have really strong opinions on this, but I would say those stand out to me. What about you?
Yeah. I'm not super passionate about it. I think there's a lot of good logos in the league. Yeah, Dallas is tough. I don't like Dallas's, but I think ones people don't talk about very often. The Pittsburgh Penguins have a pretty solid one. Like the tough looking penguin holding a stick. I like that. I like the Buffalo Sabres. I think that's a neat one. But the original six are always there. I think those are really solid ones. Arizona's, it's all right. I think the one that I don't like is the one you touched on, the Dallas Stars. And also, I've never really been a fan of the Carolina Hurricanes logo. I get it. It's a hurricane. It's the eye of the storm. I understand it. I never been a huge fan of it. But as a whole, I think the league has done a very good job with their logos. I think they're all solid. Capitals could use a little bit of work. It's just their name. It's not very creative. But, you know, Philly, Montreal, I think Columbus, the newer teams that have come into the league, Vegas, Seattle, they're really good. Even Nashville back in the day, they're all really solid logos. Like Seattle is simple, but it's nice. I like it. Good question, Lance. Thank you.
Name is Mike.
Let's do one more, Twin. Sorry.
I live in Florida currently, but I'm a Michigan Tech grad. I was wondering if he's ever crossed paths with Andy Sutton, who evidently was a pretty fierce player in his day. See what John has to say about him. Well, he went to Tech as well.
Andy Sutton was on the show, right? Wasn't he, Tim?
Yeah, I looked it up. We had him on September 2021, so about 2 years ago. But Mike, if you look it up and you Google Andy Sutton dropping the gloves, you'll find that episode. It's a pretty good interview. We had some good stories. He was undrafted too, right?
I don't know. I never played. Did I play against him? I don't know. He was one of those guys who was big, but just not that tough. A la Hal Gill, who Corey Cross, those types of players who were just tall and big, good defensemen, but just couldn't fight a lick. So if me and Andy would have dropped the gloves, I would have just destroyed him. But we never did because he knew his place, right?
His thing was the hip checks. Remember him talking about that?
I do.
Yeah.
He was pumping his company, Verbero or whatever. Verbero Hockey? Wasn't that him?
Oh, I don't remember.
Or did he have a winery? I can't remember.
He had something, it's yeah.
So long. Let's do one more. Do you got it queued up, Tim, or do you want to just be on our way?
Let's save it. I'll save it for next time.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you for joining us. We still got to get Luch on. I got to text him back. He's been ghosting me a little bit, but I hope everybody enjoyed the show. We'll talk to you on Monday. Have a good drive, Tim.
Thank you. Thanks for saying that. It means
you're
a lot.
Welcome. It's going to take a long time, but you're going to do great. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you later. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.